In 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to the Sports Ticket. It is time to talk to the voice of the KU Jayhawks, Brian Haney, brought to you as always by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. And the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney, is with us, and he has come down a little bit from that amazing game that took place earlier this week, the Liberty Bowl in Memphis. KU falling in triple overtime to Arkansas, 55-53. You know, Brian, as a play-by-play announcer, you're always hoping to have great ball games, no matter what the sport is. And this one looked like it might be a laugher for a while. But I remember I was listening to you the first half. I was here in studio. I was thinking the same thing you were, that if KU could just stop turning the ball over, get a stop or two on defense, that KU is far from being done, because we've seen KU come back in other games this year. And sure, lo and behold, that's what the Jayhawks did.
It was incredible. And, you know, we were referencing Houston and Morgantown and telling the fans, hey, bear with us. They can claim out of a two-touchdown hole. They've done it before. But to rally back from down 25 halfway through the third quarter, I mean, nobody saw that coming to that degree. You literally have to have just about every break go your way. And the sequence of events that transpired and unfolded for Kansas to take advantage of those opportunities was so improbable, and yet it speaks to the great resilience of this Kansas team, the fight that we saw in all three phases of the game. I mean, the defense forces four consecutive punts and gets the fumble recovery, which I know on replay review we probably got a good call, but I mean, just to be fighting hard at that point and take advantage of Arkansas probably getting a little bit cute when all they had to do was run the ball straight forward a couple of more times, and with what they were averaging per carry in Kansas with no timeouts remaining, they probably run out the clock. But Kansas was fighting to the finish and absolutely pounced when that little tiny window of a door opening opened up just a little bit. Man, they bust through it and score those last two touchdowns with the onside kick in between, you know, with such little time left. It was just amazing to see what they did. And Jalen Daniels, to go from a first half where he clearly was not himself, Coach Leipold said that he thought after he fumbled the snap, he just kind of looked a little bit rattled. We saw the two interceptions after it, and it was not the same cool, calm, collected, swag-tastic Jalen Daniels that loves life and is always bouncing around smiling. But I thought he really calmed down midway through that third quarter after a couple of short out-pattern passes to the flat area on the right and left side of the field. He went a little bit vertical, and Luke Grimm made a great catch and picked up about 25 more yards after the catch for a 45-yard completion. I think that really settled him in, and we saw the real Jalen Daniels get in a groove after that. And obviously, you know by now what he went on to do with the 544 yards, single-game school record at Kansas. No FBS quarterback has ever passed for 500 yards, had five TDs and a rushing TD in a bowl game. And to think he wasn't even having a great game until midway through the third quarter. It's amazing what he wound up doing. And I was asking David out loud on the postgame, I mean, have you ever seen a quarterback in the same game go from outhouse to penthouse to that degree? Because we were all wondering, I mean, is he going to be able to get it together? I mean, just wasn't looking like his normal self. And did he ever? I mean, he turns in a game for the ages, breaking Todd Reesing's previous record of 498 yards versus Mizzou. And obviously he wants to win. Obviously he was so bummed that he didn't have a chance to make the game-tying play. But I'll tell you what, the play call was there.
Yes.
You know, it's a tough spot for Jason Bean, who's only thrown one ball all game. But he had the wide-open tight end, or he could have run it in. And so I don't criticize or have any second-guessing on the decision-making to run that play, because they were working on their fourth two-point conversion of the game, and the play did exactly what it was set up to do. They just didn't get it executed. So many takeaways from that one, but no reason to hang your head, Jayhawks fans. What fight, what toughness, what resilience, and get this, man. We got 19 to 22 starters coming back next year, so it's going to be awesome to see what this thing looks like when the Jayhawks get on the practice field in just 2 months, believe it or not, for the start of spring ball, with all these seniors that are taking advantage of their COVID year, electing to come back. Kansas is going to have great roster continuity. And I think this is a team that should be in the discussion for preseason top 25 consideration. I really do. And obviously the preseason accolades Jalen Daniels is going to command and several of his teammates are going to have this next season filled with so much hype before we even get in to the spring calendar. So a lot to be grateful for with Kansas football, that's for sure.
No doubt. There's so many things we could delve into in regards to the game. And let's talk about that final play. And you touched upon it, and I agree with you 1,000%. Because it's one of those things as a coaching staff, you can call the perfect play. And if it's not executed, you then get chastised because you made the wrong play call. There's times where you actually might make the wrong play call and a player bails you out. We've seen Mahomes do that a few times for the Chiefs. Great players tend to do that. I'm sure Jalen Daniels has done that before for Coach Leipold and the coaching staff, where a play probably was the wrong call against a certain defense and Daniels improvised and made a play. But that's the two easy things to criticize after a loss or after any game. Obviously, the zebras, the officiating, that's easy. And then the second one is to criticize play calling. I want to talk about that final play because I'm kind of caught in between. When I watched it live, my first reaction, Brian, was, okay, man, that's a tough spot for Jason Bean. Two, Jalen Daniels was rolling. And I've always stated that you go down with your best. If I'm kicking a field goal, I'm not kicking with my backup kicker. I'm kicking a field goal with my best kicker. If I need a three-pointer in a basketball game, I'm going to my best three-point shooter, or I'm going to my best player. If I need a free throw to tie the game and it's a technical foul situation, I'm not going my second-best free throw shooter. I'm going with my best. Having said that, Jalen Daniels played so well. Obviously, they're keying on him to where the play was wide open, and I think it still was the right play call. But what about that thinking as a coach? Because sometimes I think we are all guilty of overthinking. And I think there are times where coaches at the pro, college, high school level or below maybe overthink, thinking the other team's going to key on this or that and maybe get too cute. I don't think the KU got too cute. But what about just the fact that, hey, man, as most people were seeing it live, like I was, and then once I stepped back, I kind of realized, listen, they have a limited amount of two-point plays, that they felt good about it, and if Bean makes the pass to the tight end or if he decides to run, we may still be talking today about, you know, a win at the Liberty Bowl. But what about that whole breakdown of trying to figure out what to do in crunch time on a play that basically decides a game?
Well, I think you could take either side of the argument, and there's really compelling points to be made, and you could absolutely side with, you know, one side and feel like that's definitely the right decision. I mean, I felt for Jason a little bit.
Me too.
Put in that spot because he'd only thrown one pass all game, and it's asking a lot. At the same time, I felt for Andy Kotelnicki because, you know, we're talking about a fifth different two-point try. They had, obviously, you know, multiple ones throughout the regular portion of the game. I guess it was the fourth or the fifth. I'm trying to add them up in my head as I drive in the car from the airport here. Because we chased points early in the first half.
Right.
You had to do it late in regulation. You had to do it multiple times in overtime. I guess twice in overtime at that point.
I think that'd been the fifth.
At some point, you're running out of two-point plays that aren't the same stuff, and you're trying to keep them guessing. I agree, stick with the hot hand. I agree, let Jalen make the play. But at the same time, the way he drew it up, Andy Kotelnicki, he had a wide-open option in Mason Fairchild. There wasn't a hog within 5 yards. And with Bean's speed, if he commits to the run, he probably takes it in two. That's not to be critical of Jason.
Yep.
It's just to say that when you play a 55-53 game, it's 4.5 hours long. Like, at some point, plays aren't going to work. At some point, you have to, you know, keep trying to do something different. And I think they felt the pressure there. And was it the right call to remove Jalen from the passing scenario? Probably not. But should the play have worked? Absolutely so.
Yep.
Was it a tough boat for Bean to be thrown into in that instance? Yeah, it probably was. But had they executed that play literally 100 times in practice the last 4 months?
Yeah.
Absolutely so. So what I'm getting at is, no matter how you slice it or dice it or carve it up, when you're playing in a game that had a combined total of 108 points, some wild stuff's going to happen. Some stuff's going to work. Other stuff isn't. You want to give yourselves the best chance to win, and I think they thought they were doing that because they had a guy they trusted and a guy that we're not bowling if Jason Bean doesn't make several huge plays, you know, while Jalen Daniels was out. So disappointing that that was the outcome, but man, just the chance to be in that spot shows you all the little plays that had to be made. Hey, let's strip the offensive debate out of the deal and just talk about a defense that forced four straight punts and then got a fumble recovery. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the best onside kick on the high hop that they were able to get from Tabor Allen. It was just perfect. And how there was no Razorback around it, I still don't know.
Yeah.
But all these things had to come to fruition, and in all three phases, they did. And for a Kansas team that, how many times this year, even in our best season since 2008, we've had numerous days where we're like, man, you know, the offense was great, but if only the defense would have brought it. Or, man, the defense stepped up huge. I wish we could get both the offense and the defense clicking on the same day. Or what in the world just happened with special teams? Without them, we win this game. Well, this was an instance where you dug the deepest hole you could possibly dig and still climb out of it. But it truly took perfection in the last quarter and a half from all three phases, and that's what Kansas got. And let's hold our heads high and cling to that. And I know that sounds like sunshine and rainbows, but there's a lot of sunshine we saw in those last 25 minutes of game time, was there not?
No, I agree with you. Brian Haney, voice of the Jayhawks, with us today on a Friday, usually a Thursday, but he was flexible for us last week, and we're flexible for him this week. That's how it works, man. And Aris Insurance Agency is our sponsor. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky at 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. One more thing about the game, and then I want to look kind of to the future with this football program, Brian. And that is, and I don't know what you guys were thinking in the booth, but when the game went to overtime and KU got the ball first, I was immediately thinking, you've got the momentum, you score, go for two. I know most people are going to kick the extra point, but right, both teams defensively weren't able to stop anybody. Well, I mean, KU was in the regulation. Now, in overtime, KU defense did not make a stop. But at that point in time, I was thinking, and I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just talking about the strategy with the two-point situation in overtime in college football. Was my thinking was, I assumed, and I was wrong, I thought Arkansas would go for two if KU kicked the extra point. And I was thinking, KU go for two, you forced them to go for two, and it might have ended up being 46-46 instead of 45-45. But were you guys thinking that Coach Leipold might go for two there in the first overtime to go up eight? And then did you believe, like I did, that when KU kicked the extra point, that Arkansas was probably just going to go ahead and get the touchdown and go for two and end it? Because I was surprised Arkansas kicked the PAT.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised KU kicked the PAT since they went first.
Yeah.
But I did think there was a chance Arkansas might end it on the other end because, as you said, Kansas had all the momentum. They were scoring at will. Prior to the Arkansas touchdown, Kansas had rattled off 32 unanswered points.
Yeah.
I mean, that's unheard of. And so I would not have faulted the Arkansas coaches one bit if they went for two there. But you know what? Maybe they played it by the percentages because I guarantee you on that sideline, they were thinking, what did we get ourselves into when we ran a reverse, when Kansas was out of timeouts with 3 minutes to go, and all we needed was one more first down, and the game is literally over.
Mm-hmm.
I think they probably thought, like, we better play percentages here, just kick the extra point to match them, because we're really going to get roasted if we end up going for two when the PAT, their kicker was, I think, 50 for 50 on the season at that point in PATs. If they would have thrown away the sure thing tie in a second overtime to be overly aggressive after their aggressiveness cost them regulation,
right?
Maybe that's part of what Pittman was thinking, because not many are going to talk about it these last 36 hours like they would have had Kansas held on to win. But the fact that they got cute with KU was out of timeouts and you're on the Kansas 30-yard line and you just need one more first down, and they tried to run a trickeration reverse play around the edge, whether it was a bad call on replay review or not, I think they probably got a little too fancy right there, and that would have been the leading story in Fayetteville, I promise you, had they not pulled out this game.
I agree with you. I had a coach tell me one time, and we were talking about overtime. He's a friend of mine. He's a coach. And he told me, football coach, and he said that in overtime situations, if you believe you're the better team, then you go ahead and try to lengthen the game as long as you can. So in this situation, instead of making one play decide the game for Arkansas, he would say, listen, Arkansas feels like they're the better team. If you feel that way, then you go ahead and kick the extra point the longer the game goes. And plus, of course, they ran the ball, you know, ran the ball so effectively. And now you're getting into two-point plays, short yardage situations in a triple overtime. And KU's defense, as you mentioned, came up with some big stops. But in overtime, Arkansas scored, like, boom, you snapped your fingers. They scored very easily on everything there in overtime. And then on top of it all, the defenses are probably getting tired. But I just think it's an interesting dynamic. what coaches have to think about nowadays in regards to fourth and one, fourth and two at your own 40. Well, do I punt when I'm not good at punting? If I'm not good at special teams, do I go for it because my best unit is my offense, which clearly the best unit for KU is their offense? Do I go for two instead of one like you did in Austin, Texas, which to me was a no-brainer last year when you're the underdog? You go for it. But I think it's a lot more stressful to me, and I think coaches, you know, you get paid a lot of money to get it right. But it makes it a little bit more difficult, doesn't it, in regards to the two-point tries, whether to go for it. Like Coach Leipold, he chased points in the first half, which if he gets it, he looks great. He didn't, had to burn a two-point play that maybe he could have had in his back pocket in triple overtime, which, of course, hindsight 20/20 everywhere.
Yeah, and I love the strategy of your coaching, Brent. I think he's absolutely right. And it's equally correct, as you pointed out, with the Austin, Texas example of a year ago, to go for two when you're the underdog and you've got one play to possibly slay Goliath,
yep,
then you absolutely do it, because eventually depth, you know, the battle in the trenches, all that attrition through fatigue, like you talked about, wins out for the deeper, more talented, more confident team. So if you're the underdog with a sling of the stone, man, you go for Goliath right there, right now. If you're the better team, you try to extend the game. I think your coaching fit is spot on. So it's amazing that you know, we're going to have these debates and talk about, you know, all these decisions that ended up in 108 total points and such great individual efforts on all sides. And like I said at the very start of the interview, the most exciting thing for me is so many of these guys are coming back.
Yeah.
And that to me should have Jayhawk fans so fired up for 2023 and really – without any braggadocious or overconfidence or overzealousness right now, puff your chest out thinking, you know what, this should become the expectation year in and year out, you know, that we're competing for bowl berths and better than bowl berths. We're, you know, competing within the Big 12 Conference, because that's what Leipold did for his last 4 years, won 30 games at Buffalo, had three bowl appearances back-to-back-to-back, with the facilities upgrades that are on the way and a brand-new entrance to the north side of campus there, the way the football stadium and everything they're going to do to renovate it is going to become so much more of a modern day, keep up with the Joneses type facility compared to what it's been. The way Leipold's been recruiting and what you have to now show future recruits of the instant success and the rewards they're reaping already through the hard work of this program 2 years in. But only once in Kansas football's history have we ever had back-to-back bowl seasons, and that was the 20-win stretch of 07 and 08. I think so long as Lance Leipold is at the helm and Travis Goff is in this athletic department, we should expect to see Kansas in the bowl 3 years out of five. I mean, it should become a regular occurrence more times than not, and especially with what they bring back next year. So that, for me, has me very excited, and I hope my Jayhawk brethren feel the same way.
All right, so what's the biggest thing Kansas got to do to take that next step? I mean, obviously special teams was not great this year. The kicking game wasn't great this year. Defense certainly had issues. The offense was the best unit. Well, where does this team, what do they need to do to get better to where they can take that next step next year?
There were a couple of things that were probably most glaring. One was missed tackling against better teams, more dynamic offenses, and then a special teams unit that on numerous occasions felt like they were letting you down a little bit, whether it was the kicking struggles of Jacob Borchilla, sometimes the punting game when Reese Vernon was back there. You noticed they went with Addison in the bowl game. You didn't get enough height on the kicks, and we were yielding big returns. And sometimes it was decisions in the return game ourselves that cost Kansas. But special teams, I think, has a long ways to go consistently to getting Kansas to where they want to be there. And then I think defensively, we're going to add some more pieces, and we're going to be better there in terms of open field tackling and just having the depth to be as disruptive as we want to be week one through week 12. Clearly, you know, Lonnie Phelps and Craig Young weren't quite the same guys in November, slowed by some injuries and obviously going up against better tackles and offensive linemen on the other side. I think you'll see Kansas add to their depth there. I think you'll see Kansas be more assignment sound, fundamentally strong next year defensively. Because we saw in spurts a very good Kansas defense. They just struggled at times to put four quarters together. And I think the bowl game the other night was a great example of that. I mean, the last five drives, they get five straight stops. looked like a completely different unit than what we saw giving up those 28 straight points to Arkansas in the first half. So I think those are the things that Kansas will try to shore up and build upon. Offensively, you know, you're going to get Daniel Hyshaw back next year, which makes the run game more dynamic, along with Devin Neal and Kai Thomas, who had his best 2 weeks of practice as a Jayhawk in the 2 weeks that preceded the bowl game. And he winds up with two touchdowns, you know, in the biggest game of the year. So it's no surprise that it just took a little bit longer for him to get acclimated. But once he did, they very much have expectations and plans to utilize him within this Kansas offense. So I like what we bring back. And, you know, Jalen Daniels will technically be a senior on paper next year. But if he wants to use the COVID year, he's got two more years at Kansas. He's just 20 years old, just been 20 back in October. So, I mean, this is a kid that, unless he has such a phenomenal season next year that he's looking at getting drafted, he could have him for two more seasons. Think about all the winning he and Leipold could do together, and Andy Cole and Mickey calling the plays in the next couple of years if you can keep him healthy and keep him at Kansas. So, for all those reasons, we're feeling pretty bullish about our team and puffing our chest out, even after defeat, holding our heads high, because we're awfully proud of where this program is at. Just 2 years in, really just 18 months in for the Lance Leipold era at Kansas.
Somebody asked me when KU was 5-0 going in a TCU game, and I think the same question could apply today, and that is, how did Kansas make such a big jump so quickly? And my answer, and I'd like to hear your answer, and you may agree with me, you may have a different viewpoint, and my quick answer without even thinking about it was coaching. And we finally have a quarterback. KU finally has a bona fide number one quarterback. And that makes up for so many things. Because I look at these games this year, KU won a few games maybe they shouldn't have had. And the defense made enough plays. But the offense, more often than not, was always there to, you know, rally and make plays and so forth and so on. It was clearly the best unit on the field. And it's pretty exciting to see where they could go forward. But I say coaching and quarterback. How about you?
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. And how fun was that offense? You know, we'll see where the final stats come out when bowl season is over, but they were closing out the regular season top five nationally in yards per play, you know, behind the likes of Alabama and Ohio State. I mean, now that's a fun product worth buying your season tickets to David Booth Kansas Memorial Stadium. That's a fun product to tune into the Jayhawk Network and listen to an offense scoring 5 and 6 touchdowns a game. And obviously, that's keyed by the best quarterback you've had since Todd Reeves, but it's also keyed by great play calling and coaching and scheme. So, yeah, I think that's the best answer, the easiest one, and you know, hopefully we'll add to that list of reasons why we're great in the future, because I think as you give this program more time to establish culture, add more of their guys, and just keep this ball of momentum rolling bigger and bigger downhill, you know, you're going to see this Kansas program become consistently not just a team that qualifies for bowl games with 6 wins, but has a chance to have a say in the Big 12 race. And we haven't been talking about that since 2007.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so now we can focus fully on basketball. Football season is officially over with the loss and the triple overtime to Arkansas at the Liberty Bowl. Real quick thoughts on KU, where they stand now, the men's team ranked number 4 in the country, going into their Big 12 opener coming up tomorrow at Allen Fieldhouse against Oklahoma State at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, excited for the New Year's Eve Big 12 opener, excited to see Kansas on the other side of the holiday break. And I think it was a classic, you know, day before Christmas break type look ahead game where there wasn't quite the same energy versus Harvard. But if you rewind the tape just a few days earlier, that performance versus Indiana was, I think, Kansas playing at pretty close to its optimal level. And that looked like a team that could beat anybody, especially in a wide open year of national contenders this year. I mean, several national media members were tweeting about how Kansas could possibly run it back if they could somehow bottle that up. So certainly we're still curious to see, you know, the evolution of the freshman bigs and what's MJ Rice's role going to be as he gets a little more seasoned, but also as that rotation starts to shrink. But beyond that, you know, the other, you know, 4 starters, when you talk about Dewan Harris at points, maybe the most underrated point guard in America, Jalen Wilson's had a first half of the season and has him on the short list for first-team All-Americans. And you look at some of those other options that Grady Dick has brought to the mix with the best shooting freshman that Kansas has ever had under Bill Self. And Self will tell you on some days it's the best shooter he's ever coached, which is certainly high, high praise for Kansas. And you know, you really like the way the rest of that starting 5 rounds out for our Jayhawks right now. And so Obviously, K.J. Adams has been a surprise success for KU that has exceeded every expectation. He's going to be in that rotation regardless, whether he's, you know, in there against bigger teams in key junctures or not. I think he's one of the more pleasant surprises of the first half of this season. But when you look at everybody else and how this roster is assembled, man, I'm so excited to see the way it's come together. I don't think you could have asked for a better start than 11-1 when you consider how, you know, difficult this schedule was, how many projected NCAA tournament teams you faced. And so to see the way that Kansas has come off of last season and just kept that expectation level and that bar raised at a similar height just speaks to the brilliance of Bill Self and what a juggernaut of a program he's got right now. And hopefully we're talking about them, you know, in that same top four territory 2 months from now when they're, you know, heading around the turn for the final stretch of league play, because if that's the case, you're talking about what would be an 11th one seed in a 17-year stretch. Mm. That includes the pandemic when they should have been the one of all ones. And I'm telling you, Wade, I mean, nobody does that. There's no program that has that. So hopefully where they sit today as we get set for the first league game tomorrow is similar national positioning to where they finish up the league race. Because if so, they got a great, great shot as perhaps an odds-on favorite even to repeat as national champ. And the addition of Kevin McCullough as well, a guy that is literally the perfect fit for what Bill Self wants to do defensively. Can't imagine a better transfer portal addition. And he's working out way better than Remy Martin did because he's realizing his potential about 3 or 4 months sooner. Not that he'll ultimately surpass Remy's contribution, but what I'm getting at is he's made this Kansas team even better defensively than we ever could have hoped for after what we lost a year ago, and it keeps you on that same trajectory as well. So all these guys, you know, with the additions of Grady and Kevin on top of what we had coming back, make you feel like this absolutely looks like a national title contender.
All right, time for the off-the-wall question for the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney. How was the water in Memphis? I heard about there was no running water, that some hotels didn't have running water, that bathrooms weren't operational. Did you have to deal with the water issue in Memphis there during the Liberty Bowl?
Yeah, we had the issues that most hotels had. Our hotel at least had water, but we were told, certainly don't drink it, don't brush your teeth with it, don't wash your face with it. If you can try to shower without getting your body completely soaked in it, that's advisable because you don't want to ingest it in any way. And so I washed my hair standing outside the shower on two occasions and did the rest with Dasani, quite frankly. And that's not a point for them. It's just what we had. My buddies teased, couldn't KU spring for some Fiji for you? And I said, let's save the money for the stadium rebuild. But yeah, I was washing my face and shaving with Dasani. Not trying to get anything splashed out of, you know, water that clearly wasn't boiled and germs weren't, you know, taken out of it. So you didn't want to wind up with some kind of virus, and especially get sick when we have the biggest football game of the year to call. So that was our, you know, 96 hours there in Memphis. And it caused several key restaurants to close. Some of the best barbecue joints I'd gotten recommendations on weren't in operation because of it. It caused a lot of, you know, I guess, inconvenience, but I was so impressed with the KU fans that showed up despite reports of that, despite having twice as long of a drive as most Arkansas fans. They didn't let it faze them one bit. When you've been waiting 14 years, man, you're not going to let a little, water boil break to possibly affect your travel plans. And I thought Jayhawk fans really made us proud, especially on Beale Street on the pep rally day that we had. I mean, they were outnumbering Arkansas tremendously at that point. So, really, really pleased that they didn't allow that to derail their plan.
For our listeners, what was the source? Why was there a problem with the water?
There was some pipes that broke, and it led to a downtown Memphis area water boil. I don't want to say crisis, but basically the water that was available could have been contaminated. You didn't want to drink it.
Okay.
And in other places, they turn the water off entirely, and you had no chance to get any running water, which meant you couldn't flush toilets, you couldn't whatever. Yeah. Some hotels just flat out shut down and turned people away.
Yeah.
But ours wasn't as bad, and like I said, a few showers in the sink and that kind of thing. Really good.
You never know what you're going to experience in life, do you? You never know.
You know, I'm sure I've sounded better than we did on the call, but I know I've smelled better because I hadn't had a true shower since Christmas morning. So That I can tell you for sure.
Well, there's only so much Dasani water to go around, all right? You got to ration that. I understand. Sure. Hey, man, I hope you had a great Christmas. Happy New Year to you and your family, and we look forward to talking again next week in 2023. What a run it's been in 2022, the KU football team making a bowl game, giving us the thrill the other night, and then, of course, the basketball team, national champions. It's been quite the 2022 for KU Jayhawk fans, and we appreciate you being with us every step of the way every week to talk about it.
Absolutely, my friend. It's been a blast. Can't wait for all that lies ahead. Can't imagine many years being better than 2022, but as we just talked about for the last 30 minutes, boy, if you're not excited about what's coming up in 2023, you better check your pulse, because what a great time to be a Jayhawk right now in Kansas Nation.
Absolutely. Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, brought to you each and every week by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill in Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.